If you don't have a historically accurate consciousness, then you're going to have a hysterically inaccurate consciousness. And so because we got to where we are through historic changes of not only different epical movements on the social, political, anthropological level, but at the level of the structure and dynamics of individual consciousness. And if we understand how that shift happened, we can reverse the process. So I will give a simplified version. So I'm going to focus on the Western world, the so-called Western civilization that never really happened. And so we'll start with Egypt. Now out here is Bharat, India, of the Copper Age. Egypt is a copper or Dwapar Yuga civilization that extended into the beginnings of Kali Yuga. And so the mysteries of Egypt that were contained in their mythologies and their esoteric teachings, most of which are not available in a proper form, except if you know how to read the code, are at the very roots of the civilizations upon which the Western consciousness is built, right? So, indirectly, Bharat, the Indian philosophy, the Vedic teachings had an effect, an influence on Egypt in its latter period, as well as directly and indirectly on Greece and Israel. When I use the term Israel, I'm using it as a conglomerate term because it's what remains of a number of civilizations in the Near East at that time. Mostly the Canaanites, right? The Canaan, the Assyrians, and those that became known as the Hyksos, who went to Egypt. And among those was the tribe of the patriarch Jacob. And Jacob is probably the major figure of that period. And he was wise enough when there were great difficulties in the area now we could call Palestine, because the Philistines were already occupying that area, and as well as other tribes. That during a very difficult period and a period of famine, that he went to Egypt. He brought his tribe in, and his son Joseph, as you read the story in the Torah, he was in a way kidnapped. His brothers betrayed him, etc. But the truth is, he married the daughter of the chief high priest of Egypt. And Joseph became then later also the prime minister of Egypt. He became a very high figure who was in the know of all of the esoteric teachings of the Egyptians. And they were coded into the Torah, but coded into it in a way that is not understandable by the rabbinic gematria, their way of trying to decode the secret meaning. So I want to emphasize that it is a scripture that has levels of meaning that are not known to current forms of either Judaism, although the Kabbalists have decoded a good amount of it. In the Zohar and in other Kabbalistic texts, you will find some of those deeper secrets of the Egyptian mysteries that were passed on. And some of them entered through alchemy, alchemia, which is originally a meaning for Egypt, into the Sufi traditions. And alchemy has, of course, remained throughout the Middle Ages and was rediscovered by Jung, etc., but in a corrupted form. But in any case, it was through that union of the Israelite patriarchal tribes with the last of the Egyptian teachers of spiritual power, the ones who knew how to build pyramids, the ones who knew how to achieve very high levels of magic, which you see references to with Moses. The truth is, Moses was an Egyptian. He wasn't actually an Israelite, and the name really was Thutmose. He was a disciple and a priest of Thoth, the Egyptian ibis-headed god, whose teachings became a very important part of Jewish esoteric, and then Merkabah mysticism, and later forms of mystical Israelite pre-first and second temple Judaism, and that continued rooted through the teachings of Rav Yeshua. So there are direct influences that passed to that tradition, but that have been mostly submerged and are not available except if you're in the vibrational frequency in which you can download them directly, and they are there for the asking if you know the code of the Akashic records in order to receive them. In the same way, Pythagoras, the great philosopher of Greece, went to Egypt, and he also studied with the last of the esoteric Egyptian masters of their tradition, and then he went back and created an ashram in Italy, actually, and passed on via the metaphor of the octave, the seven right notes, and much of not only musical theory, but philosophical theory was coded into that metaphor and into early music, which carried the vibrational frequency of those teachings. All of that has not been able to be grasped or retained by the modern intellect. So it's, for the most part, lost to us. But it's available if you're in the frequency in which it was delivered. It's here, but you have to know how to find it in the spectrum of consciousness. So then the combination of these happened. Rome, of course, occupied Israel. This was the time of Yeshua, and then the Roman Empire grew and extended its tentacles all the way into Europe, even into Angleland, and then the Roman Empire that had become Christianized created a whole Western Christendom. And that lasted through the Middle Ages. But it was a Christendom in which most of these early mysteries were gone. The Gnostic Gospels, so-called, were burned and banished. Hypatia, Hypatia, the woman who was the greatest high priestess of the Christian church in Egypt, was murdered, and Christendom became a very lower level religious teaching, but it was able to conquer Europe. So if we think of this as the first phase, and the Greek and Israel as the second, Rome as the third, to Christendom as the fourth, the Christian kingdoms held on to the aristocratic teachings of the divine right of kings and of the teachings of the king's obligation to support the Dharma as a kind of bodhisattva. You know, the Kshatriya class or caste in India were the second highest caste. The Brahmins were the first. Here you have a split between the two powers of the religious and the state power, but the state power is still there to serve to serve God by protecting the kingdom from evil, right? The aristocracy, Aristos, was the continuation into Kali Yuga of the Aryan tradition. The Aryan were the first aristocrats and the noble ones. But gradually through time, the loss of there was very little soul consciousness left, and the ego consciousness led to a corruption of the aristocracy, and a lack of the members of that aristocracy wanting it to continue. The lower death drive created such schisms that produced a rising tide of wars and internecine struggle and struggle between men and women for the first time that ended the ability for that class to hold together. And it led to ever weaker kings and queens, and then that led to the period of revolution. Or revolutions, I should say. So, in this first period, the world was ruled by real three ideals, okay? In other words, the goal was to reach the highest level of consciousness. But in the period of Christendom, around the 12th century, real two took over as the hegemonic reality. And the real that is dominant determines the moral compass of the consciousness. Whatever the consciousness considers to be the bedrock of reality becomes the marching orders of the soul in terms of what does it want to get out of life. And so in the early periods, the first three, the goal of life was liberation, was God consciousness, was the bliss of union with God. And this was, of course, the basis of the urge for sainthood among Christians. And it was there in all of the religious traditions, not only throughout Europe, but throughout the whole world at that time. But around the 12th century, and this was also global, real two became the dominant. And we saw this with the troubadours and the minnesingers, and suddenly Tristan and Isolde. It was all about love, but it was not divine love anymore. It was the romantic love. So this was the period of romanticism, and that was what held together the aristocracy during that period. But then when the egocentric consciousness took over, love died. and love became a four-letter word, as we know, and the meaning of life and the power to live a life that would bring fulfillment was lost. So I'm going to continue this here. Let's see, this will, we're in about five here. And this, then we enter this period of imperialist capitalism. Capitalism takes over along with the fall of Christendom into a division, right? The Protestant Revolution or Reformation, Lutheranism, Calvinism, all of that led then to a capitalist a form of social order, no longer an aristocracy. And at the same time, there were, the communist movement was all, was beginning with Proudhon and other pre-Marxist socialists. But it was all about now conquest, materialism, atheism, and colonialism, and scientism, and so that the colonialist period, which is what most of us know in the modern period of the Western hegemony, is now come to an end. But in its last period, in order to keep control, the capitalists who now at this next level have become globalists in the attempt to have world empire have were on a program for a long time of the dumbing down of society, of the destruction of clans, the destruction of trust, the destruction of love, whatever was left of couples' love and the love of parents for children, the destruction of the family, the destruction of all of the traditional order in order to be able to have centralized power. And the complete rule by thugs. Remember that Indiana Jones movie of the thuggies? They were in India, right? The thuggies really existed, but the concept of a thug and thuggery, of criminals running the world, was the total opposite of the aristocratic ideal, right? Of nobility, protecting the world from criminals. The criminals now run the world in this last phase. And the consciousness in this phase is now ruled by the dominant of real one.